I just wanted to say something about, not that we have to explain ourselves to anybody, but I just wanted to say something about, on my part, particularly, why the silence for so long. And for me, it was an exercise in frustration, even though I poured my heart into the work, just like when Lydian, trying to help Leonard Peltier get his freedom, and then the tremendous frustration of the hold the government, the FBI, has on his mind, and that he always ends up stabbing a friend in the back because of a white woman. And you know, Toni Zeidan, I don't know who she is. She pretended to be my friend and then stabbed me in the back to get rid of me and Wembley. And Leonard bought it, like he always does, apparently. This I know from Wembley, who lived it in his own flesh 4 or 5 times, that this old warrior keeps calling him back and then kicking him in the ass, you know. And that's enough. No more. But anyway, that was one frustrating thing. And then the other one is when we were working with the people that were trying to save Bear Butte from that bar. And we thought that it would be of great help to have a strong government like the Venezuelan government visibly on our side. And because of that suggestion, Wembley and I were ostracized from that group. These are people that are family, that are friends, that are old warriors like Wembley. And without any explanation, they just closed their ears and did their own thing, which ended up being the same old thing that it's done all the time. Having the same people talk for hours and hours on end. And then everybody that talked feels good. And but there's no acknowledgement of anybody who is not in the elite, the leadership of the so-called American Indian movement. And that's why that movement is not going anywhere. They've never... A little bit of recognition goes such a long ways. And when the egocentrics are at the helm, that doesn't happen. And a lot of people get tired of being used. So that's why from then on I didn't have the energy to do the WB. It just hurt too much. That was just my thing.
I agree. We struggled with it. We tried to do several shows, sending our information out to outlets up north, and it just hurt too much. You know, especially the Bear Butte thing, you know, was such a... I mean, not only was it, did we get the government there, we actually have contacts in the consulate. The TWB has a really interesting history of working with people of all walks of life. And no, I'm sorry, you know, all Muslim people aren't terrorists, you know. And some of the terrorists are capitalists. You know, and... Bush is a terrorist. You know, he just goes around saying that he's talking about democracy. He's killing people. He's censoring his own people. But at any rate, we had contacts with people who are from many different aspects and walks of life. And some of them were, you know, from Muslim people. I'm Muslim. So I'm naturally going to speak to people that are interested in these kinds of struggles, because it speaks to the issue of the duality in the United States, when they're going around the world bombing people in the name of democracy, they're holding indigenous people as hostage on these reservations. And they say nothing about it, you know, like in the summit conference in 1988 when I was there. Again, I was once again working for Leonard Peltier. The president then of the United States was their boy, the one that everybody likes to talk about, Ronnie Reagan, was talking about there are many rich Indians in, his word, in the U.S. They're millionaires, as he called them. And I'd like to know what planet this guy is from, you know, because there wasn't one of these people, not from the res. There's this guy named Phillips, or somebody the name Phillips, who is supposed to be somewhat connected to a tribe through his through one of them south civilized tribes down south. I don't know, Seminole or one of them. And there are Osage who have oil wells, and some of these people, you know, Wheeler, I think his name is, and he supposedly was a bona fide seven-digit man, you know, but who cares, you know? So one guy's got a lot of money because he discovered oil or found oil, you know, in his grandma's backyard or something, you know. There's over a million more natives that can't even eat. You know, if he was such a magnanimous person, why don't you take some of that money and give it to all these reservations so their children can eat, you know? So in the Moscow that year, when Gorbachev was on his way out as a general secretary for the Soviet Union, I had a meeting with them, and I turned on a meeting with Reagan, and I got back to the States under heavy security, mind you. One of the people that went with me, that I asked to go with me, is Nedok Butler, who has passed away now, and the other one was Tony Gonzalez and his white girlfriend Karen Baker from Indian International Treaty Council, an individual that's, you know, just a good bureaucrat but nothing else, who had his own agenda over there. You know, the reason why they wanted to go was for their own purposes. I was going to try to help Leonard. I got back from there. I got back to Kansas, and I got fired by Leonard. And this should be talked about, you know. Leonard Peltier is supposed to be the icon. It's supposed to be a symbol of political prisonership. Yet this is the guy that's going around, you know, derailing his own committee. You know, and just like in the Bear Butte situation, you know, it wasn't rocket science to figure out that you could use the backing of a country like Venezuela with the money they have. I mean, they're like the third or fourth largest oil exporter in the world. You don't think that a small organization on Pine Ridge could use that, you know, just throw away money that Venezuela might have laying around the room or something with all the oil, you know, revenues they get? No. Carter Camp decides that he can't work with us because we're not Christian, and he's telling me that his sister knows all about everything down here and she can't even speak the damn language, and so what do? They show up the day, talk about paper bulls and all this other stuff, and then they get one of his sons who dominates the airways, and this guy doesn't know that much about what he's talking about. He's read his script really good over and over and over. But it's just them. It's a story about them. And I know who these guys are. I know who Alex White Plume is and Deborah White Plume and all those people are. I know them. I'm not just talking, you know, out of the top of my hat. And Carter Camp, he's one of the oligarchy, you know. And he wasn't really all that much loved here. Just go ask some of the bell courts, you know. They had a problem back in the heyday. So here it is, thinking that, you know, it's his movement, it's his elitist show. And they side with Christians, white Christians. And they go nowhere. I haven't heard nothing, you know. It's just talk. It's talk that comes to nothing. When they could have had an opportunity, we had people online ready to go. We had a whole country of Venezuela that was just snapping at the bit to go in there. And then we get a phone call back later on, some time later, and the people were really disappointed. And they, you know, they said, you know, that they didn't understand what was going on. We didn't either. This is stuff that just came up out of the pointed minds, the little pointed minds from a few people. And we had nothing to gain from this. We were just offering this help to this to Owaikua because I know who they are. I know who Alex at the time was the vice president of the tribe, but he became the president. So that kind, the Leonard Peltier model of self-destruct, you know, has become the model of the movement up north. And that cannot be the way that we're going to move forward, you know. That model is an American model. It's made to fail. Just like every program that's put on the reservation is made to fail. Because they don't want any movement to really develop. And the people like the AIM out of Minneapolis or wherever, anybody who subscribes to that methodology, they are the ones that are fomenting that kind of program of failure.
When by design or just somehow a natural direction, when a leadership is so monolithic, the people don't do anything, right? They're always waiting for them to do for them. And they never made sure that there were other younger people coming up, and now all the old guys are dying off, and there's even less left than there was before. So what's left for the next generations, I have no idea.
Well, the movement in Minneapolis and stuff is that they had been really good at running interference to prevent any real progress from happening, and that would be in the creation of the next generation of leaders. They have never groomed anybody. They don't want to groom anybody. They still have stories of Dennis Banks running around, and I don't even know what happened to Russell Beans. We have Bob Robidoux running around in Spain, you know, attacking everybody. We got two. How many museums do you have now, Bob? Two, three, four, five? Let me guess. You're in them, right? He's picking people like in the Peltier Committee, and Barry Bacharach, supposed to be the lawyer, who's obstructor and obfuscator, trying to purposely go against anybody that came in who could out-talk him, which would be easy. A baby could out-talk Barry Bacharach. You had any number of people, you know. You had Bob Robidoux attacking Bruce Ellison. I mean, maybe he's got a point. Maybe some of these people that were helping him are suspicious, you know, and connected, you know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, most of the people, if you really wanted to look deeply, you know, I think you could find something. Most of the lawyers were Jewish. And I know one of the lawyers, Ken Stern, who was Banks' lawyer in the Loudhawk trial, had an affiliate. Not only was he suspicious, but he was connected to the ADL. Now we know the ADL worked with the FBI.
And these days, I guess he's, at least under the Bush administration, he's been training police throughout the country on anti-terrorist stuff. So maybe he was studying for that while he was being a lawyer for AIM.
And the list goes on, you know. We don't know who Tony Zidin was, Ann Colony. We don't know who Pat Benabi was. We don't know any of these people. They came out of thin air. But people know my track record. I mean, you can look it up, and you can, like McCain says, you can Google it and find out who I am. I mean, I'm not hard to find. And you know my track record. I mean, everything that I've done in behalf of the movement has always been really upfront, you know. And I told the government what I was doing. So yet we have people that we don't even know where they came from, you know. The latest individual that popped up in the last go around that Tanya was talking about was somebody named Rocco Burnett, you know, supposed to be connected to somebody on the Native American Health Center or some other committee in the Bay Area. I mean, if we're going to have a movement that's made up of indigenous people who really are seeking, you know, justice and seeking, you know, to liberation, we can't use the BIA-trained Indians. I say Indians because that's what they are when I'm indigenous. And we got to get away from the model, the boilerplate model of community organizing that's used by the West, because it's just made to defeat us. We're using their model to help organize ourselves to get out from underneath them. How smart is that? We can't use the enemy's model to get out from underneath their thumb. We got to break their thumb and come up with our own models. And we better yet, we shouldn't even tell them that we're doing it. But just the general idea that what we're trying to do, you know, the American Indian Movement is made up, was developed out of a community organizing grant. And it was, the main idea was developed by a social worker. So this many years later, as I look back on it, these people never knew what the left and right hand was doing. They never did. They didn't know in Wounded Knee. They didn't know in, wherever they found themselves mistakenly or by accident. Or maybe they set it all up so they would catch some of the more grassroots-oriented traditional organizers. We don't know. Nobody knows. I mean, right now as we're speaking, one of the trials going on, I guess it's still going on, or maybe hasn't started yet, is the John Graham and Arlo Looking Cloud or Looking Horse or whatever his name is over the Annie Mae Aquash issue. And here Annie Mae Aquash was suspect herself. So with the real, whoever you guys are, you sound, the more I talk about it, the more I'm convinced I'm talking about a arm of the FBI in the American Indian Movement, you know. But I'm not talking about an indigenous movement, no. We're talking about a Western construct that came up with this idea of a community organizing program that became the American Indian Movement. And when they went to Washington, D.C., the reason why they went to Washington, D.C. is interesting. Some people don't know this. They went to Washington, D.C. because of the wave of killings across and this was in the 1970s. The wave of killings that was going on in the U.S. of indigenous people, and one of those people that was killed, shot down in cold blood in Ukiah, California, was Richard Oakes. And then they said that this guy, who is Robert Morgan, was a Park Service worker, and he disappears. To me, this guy was an assassin working for the FBI, and they sent him out to target Richard Oakes to take him down because they were worried about the movement developing real traditional resistance. That's what they were worried about. And then by the time Wounded Knee came down, there was actually a real resistance that was going on in Wounded Knee, and I ought to know because I was there. When we had brothers coming back from the Vietnam War who found themselves in Wounded Knee, we wanted to attack and seize the higher ground. We didn't want to be living the same faded story again, only a second chapter version of the first Wounded Knee. So we knew we had to get the high ground, and we set out to do that. It was the AIM oligarchy out of Minneapolis that came down and staged obstructionist interference with the face-offs and what have you to keep us, to prevent us from actually going up and seizing the government positions, which we could have. I mean, we had one kid went up there by himself. Of course, he didn't follow orders, but we had already ran patrols. We already knew what we were doing. So, and the reason why we went that way is because the United States showed its real, true colors when it started dealing with this. And that is, they wanted to exterminate us. They were willing to commit Wounded Knee again. They wasn't satisfied with the 1890 version. They wanted to do it in 1973. That's why a majority of the people that went there that were veterans went there. That's why I went there. And so since it was that stark and that ugly, we decided that we were going to resist. And we did what we thought we could do to hold off the United States from annihilating people, innocent people again. And the reason why that was happening on the Pine Ridge and in the reservation, because the United States was backing a tribal council dictator by the name of Dick Wilson, as they have on all the other reservations, I venture to say. So this is the way the U.S. deals with, you know, the Latin American countries as well. You know, they fixed the Mexican elections. One of the campaign tricks they used to sway the Mexican population, they were saying that the López Obrador was buddy-buddy with Cesar Chavez, who was this, according to the Western news media out of the U.S., was this wacko that was left-leaning. And the people, without even seeing a picture, but just hearing the story, started turning against López Obrador out in the rural areas. They didn't fall for that because the picture or the story originated out of what they called DF, or which is Mexico City, the federal district. So the people in Mexico City voted overwhelmingly for López Obrador. They didn't buy the story, but in like Tijuana and other places, Tijuana is right on the frontier or right on the border. They're 99%, you know, Felipe Calderon. Their colors are blue and white, or some off the walls colors like that, you know, dark blue or whatever. This is the kind of tricks that go on, and you don't have to really look hard. Not right now in Mexico and along the borders, total anarchy. There's three different levels of police. One is the city, one's the state, and one's the feds. And each one are gangs. They got all the weapons. They got all the intel that they need to go around, and they're doing gang warfare under their color of the law. And they're each tied to a different cartel. And so the police are rolling up on each other when they're parked somewhere, and they're having shootouts. We were there when they did it. At Pemex, it's right outside of the area where we lived at, a big gas station, and, you know, the chief of police was getting gas when four cars rolled up on him and gassed him. And it was right in broad daylight. I mean, they killed the deputy police chief right down the road going into the beach area as he was in traffic. And it's gotten worse. Now they're finding, you know, all manner of carnage and KIA is just, you know, outside of hotels and schools and whatnot, you know. So again, this is the type of free democratic election service that's brought to all these countries by the auspices of the United States. So if Obama is going to begin to change and have that change we can believe in take effect, you're going to have to deal with some of that stuff, because that's undergirds all this stuff that's on the surface now that we're talking about, whether it's campaign, you know, politics, or it's the war in Iraq, or the financial crisis, or the mortgage swindles, or the hedge fund gouging, or whatever. The infrastructure, the lack of jobs, the whatever, the educational, the meltdown of the educational system, and so on. He has to get at the heart of the matter, and that's going to take a talent. We don't know if he can do that. All we are saying is that we're calling this election for, in one way, the change of just getting those guys out of the office gives us a chance to come up for air, for number one, because they pretty much arrested everybody and sent them off to all these so-called detention centers, wherever they got them. So when they get out of office, there's going to be a huge exodus of people. When the doors fly open in a prison, the dragons will fly out. But we need to put them chickens in there. That's what we need to do. And the one who can do that, he could start the ball rolling, so the heads will start rolling, would be Obama. And we don't know if he will, But we're going to start off with this idea of just monitoring and giving you this analysis and what we've experienced. This is not just ranting here. We've experienced a lot of this. We've seen a lot of this. And we've been in places, critical places, throughout this hemisphere. And we will continue to be bringing you that kind of insight. You know, we're not just a bunch of lightweights running around here, you know, and trying to have a news broadcast here and there. You know, we are very serious about connecting with the indigenous people and having a discussion. We need to have a dialogue, the indigenous people. We are sharing this, our insights in this format that we call TWB. And we are saying some of these things for effect, but we're not playing. This is not insightful or sensationalist news. This is stuff that we've seen. This stuff that we've experienced. This stuff that's happened to us. This stuff that's happened to other people that we know. And we talk about these things openly because we're unafraid, and we have lives to live and all that. But the gist of this change we can believe in, we're going to try to keep an eye on it, try to get this up on the airwaves by tomorrow, and then we're going to continue to bring you more news coverage throughout the day. It's already tomorrow, but in a few hours it will be that way for them. But then when we get rolling tomorrow and the polls open and the voting starts, you know, we're predicting a crushing defeat for the at least half of that political system up there, the half that's been running roughshod for the last 8 years. We're also calling for them to be crushed in the polls. We're also calling for them to be crushed in a matter of justice, to be brought before the people and tried for their crimes, and that includes all the way up to the latest happenings that are developing in the stock market, because there has to be some wrongdoing up there. The bottom does not fall out just like that unless somebody's got their hand in the cookie jar. And in this case, there was a whole lot of people. You know what's interesting is the Chelsea Clinton is a hedge fund attorney. She works for one of those hedge fund companies up there that are scattering now, because the hedge fund is a high risk, futures oriented. You bet on something that hasn't happened yet. It's a lot of money to be made if you guess right. She's one of those hedge fund analysts or whatever they call themselves. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. So good luck to Obama and to Michelle and to his daughters and to the indigenous people up there.
Indigenous people have had the ability to communicate thousands and thousands of years.
That day can be undone.
And I saw nearly all the people on the ground bleeding.
Colonialism seeks to convince the displaced population that it owes its allegiance to the empire that has enslaved them. Colonialism seeks to pacify the indigenous population to work to support the existence of the empire. The best way that it has gone about it here historically is through humanitarian efforts, which is the most cost-effective for
We predict a landslide victory for Senator Obama, and we hope that that would put an end to the what we view as very racist and biased Republican era. And as seen in the McCain-Palin attack campaign ads, the issues brought up by in the Democratic nomination contest between Hillary Clinton and Senator Obama, in which race and other tactics were used to try to distract and minimize or marginalize Senator Obama as he was moving forward to, I would say, do something very historic. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes, I concur. This would be, I don't know if in reality it will be a big change politically for the United States, but it's still a historical occasion, and I don't know, I'm still very hopeful that the talk of change is alive, and that Obama had to turn it down so that the more conservative and racist people of the United States would not be scared of him. I mean, we had a few disappointments during the campaign, especially when Obama turned his back to Reverend Wright, and Michelle Obama was attacked for saying the truth, and a truth that most people of color share with her. So maybe when he's in the White House, he can open up a bit more on that side. But we'll see. We'll see what will happen. For now, until tomorrow, I hope he wins. And I hope the Republicans cannot steal this one, because the consequences will be very dangerous, and people will definitely rise up, which that's the other scenario that we have heard about over the internet, the alternative sources of information saying that's one of the scenarios in which Bush will impose complete martial law on the country, you know, if there's riots and because the election gets stolen. And so I hope that's not the way we're going, and I hope tomorrow's a happy day, and an even happier day on Wednesday. Anyway, that's all I have to say for now.
Warming up here to the task in which we're beginning to see light at the end of the tunnel, I think the saying was back in the days of Vietnam. Many things have been brought up over the 2 years, 20 months, I think, of campaigning, that the banter back and forth between one candidate, even within the nominating contest, like the Democratic nominating campaign, which was very grueling. The whole idea of polarity, the whole idea of country unity, all these sort of bastions of that everybody gravitates to and tries to achieve, were thrown into the fire just so somebody could win at all costs. I think it was the Clinton motto. And this whole idea about what constitutes a campaign of value, a campaign in which the ideas, those kinds of things, what a candidate is running on, what does he stand on, were pushed to the side. And even in the general election campaign, we've seen the incumbent senator from the Republican in John McCain, with over 20 years of experience in the senatorial halls, choose one of the most, one of the most inopportune decisions, just to save the campaign, to win at all costs, in selecting Sarah Palin, who is not vice presidential material. It may not even be gubernatorial material, but in a state like Alaska, in which we've seen that state come into statehood by the stealing of the resources from the native indigenous people up there, and what has been described as the largest land theft in the history of the U.S., whereupon the longest sitting senator has recently been convicted of taking kickbacks to the tune of $250,000 kickback. We have Sarah Palin from Wasilla, and nobody even knows anything about this person. There was a huge cover-up to even talk about whether or not the Republicans themselves vetted this unknown. And so we moved way beyond the pale of what is considered normal campaigning to this campaign of the absurd. So the underlying theory, the underlying premise for the Republicans, and for which the mandate has been served, that's why we're predicting a landslide, is because of the legacy of torture, the legacy of sworn oaths being dashed and by top officials, malfeasance to perform tasks that we saw in Hurricane Katrina aftermath, the huge mistake of going to war, first of all, but then going to war and attacking the wrong people, the Jessica Lynch, the outing of Valerie Plame, the huge cover-up of a soldier killed in battle by his own side in friendly fire, and the name escapes me right now, but Pat Tillman, excuse me. The whole 9/11 fiasco, where the Bush administration has ignored all the intel, when the offices throughout, like in Minneapolis, in L.A., and in Phoenix, were pumping in information to the State Department, headed up by Colin Powell at the time, and whose advisor to the president, and as a, in a NSC was none other than Condoleezza Rice, totally ignored all of that. That's got to be criminal negligence. And we have to see whether or not in the next administration, which we hope it will be, and we're predicting it will be Obama, what he will do with that. Because these people jeopardized the station of their offices when they did not protect and did not serve. They ignored intelligence that did not protect the United States, and then they turned around and blamed everybody else and anybody else. And then we started this whole legacy of extraordinary rendition, and you know, getting Alberto Gonzalez, you know, to narrowly define, you know, what is torture and what, either you're tortured or you're not, you know. I mean, come on. We don't have to be narrowly defining what torture is. And then what about the whole idea of, you know, interfering in other countries' elections? The idea of, like in the case of Mexico, that we were in Mexico at the time. And we know from firsthand information from Mexico how the U.S. went in and did a regime change, low intensity is what they call it, regime change, to, you know, subvert that country's election and get their man, Felipe Calderon, into office over the expected winner, López Obrador, who had a 14-point percentage lead going into the general election. And then they do the same Florida, Catherine Harris selecting the president. You know, this is another bimbo from, you know, Republicanville talking. And the next president, you know, making that big old, you know, grandstand announcement, just like Sarah Palin gets on the, you know, they where do they find these airheads at? You know, and then they get to go on Saturday Night Live and she becomes famous because she's stupid? I mean, enough of that party. The other party, the Grandville Party, as they call it, the R does not stand for Republican. It stands for racist. So we're going to be covering this. There's a lot of things that we fear. I mean, even in the campaign, we had the Democratic campaign before we got to the general campaign. We had Hillary Clinton talking about assassination. We had Bill O'Reilly on the racist Fox News networks talking about assassinating Michelle Obama. We've had everything that you can imagine. I mean, Reverend Wright was in the middle of a sermon, and they outed that as meaning his views. He was given a sermon. Is nothing sacred to the Republican, you know, right wing fanatics? Michelle Obama makes a heartfelt statement, and just like Senator Obama talks about people being desperate, you know, and with the statement he made in San Francisco, or Samantha Power speaking her mind, or any number of other people. I mean, we even heard of Obama was so fearful that there was a picture of Che Guevara in a Texas campaign office that they made him take, they made that office take that picture down. We've seen Obama shuffle and stumble backwards just to make sure that he seems, I don't know, palatable to the who. I mean, I'd like to know who is this sector out there that is called the American people? I mean, are they that, you know, rigid in their mentality that they can't handle somebody telling them the truth? There's a lot of people of all walks of life who don't feel that the United States is serving their best interests, and they don't feel like America is a place for them. Yet they're still there, and they speak their mind all the time. And then they talk about the American state being a land of democracy. You hear McCain, George Bush, all these, you know, these right-wing, you know, radicals, racists talking about, you know, they love our freedom and all, and yet people can't even speak their mind up there. I mean, Obama used words from a friend who gave him some lines in a speech, and here's Hillary saying that he plagiarized. I'm sure that if we take this to the point of ridiculousness, that there's nobody that can actually be vetted, and there's nobody that can actually be a candidate, because it's just too ridiculous. The campaign wars and the looking glass has to be changed back to reality, because this what we've seen Obama going through is borders on insanity. Nobody could stand up to such rigor. No candidate in history has had to go through what Obama has had to go through. And still, people will not acknowledge, you know, that there's something wrong with the American state. They're still saying that there's people want to go there, you know, and maybe some people do, maybe a lot of people do, but there's something wrong with the American state, and we're going to say it here at TWB. You know, we've always said there's something wrong. We said it back in 2000. We said it in 2001. We said it in 2002. Every year we've said there's something wrong with that place. I even went in on the line in Presida, San Francisco, and right around shortly after the so-called attacks, and called George Bush out. Because I understand a coward when I see one. My class, I taught at San Francisco State. I spoke in all the venues. Everybody was, you know, waving the flag, you know, the lapel pin, you know, when Obama was attacked for not wearing a lapel pin. All these things were being thrown at people as a buildup to go into war. We at TWB, and this includes me and my family and my daughter, we stood up against it.
Nien mapunu, nien mapunu, amuayo, amuayo. Nien mapunu, nien mapunu, amuayo, amuayo. Lamienanai, lamienanai. Nien mapunu, nien mapunu, amuayo, amuayo. Nien mapunu, nien mapunu, amuayo, amuayo. La futoi mi, lamienanai, lamienanai. Nien mapunu, nien mapunu, amuayo, amuayo. Nien mapunu, nien mapunu, amuayo, amuayo. Lamienanai, lamienanai.